This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I don't know if you received this email, Rick, from Elias Sports Bureau, from our terrific producer, Ray Dinahan, about Sam Darnold, but I think these are some stats that
That's ugly.
It's unbelievable. I didn't even realize it was this bad. Did you?
Is it really, though? Is it that unbelievable?
Yes.
Have you seen who his head coach is? Have you seen who his head coach is?
You blame
it, all of it on the head coach?
Most of it. And I can tell you one thing. Sam Darnold was not overly enthusiastic about his head coach deciding to take over play calling duties when he came back. Because his coach is that bad.
His coach is terrible.
I don't understand how we put no blame
on Sam Darnold.
Well, no, there's some blame. But you've had the kid. I mean, you've had the kid for 2 years in your system, and we haven't graduated to the point where you allow, like, you haven't coached this kid up enough where you can trust him at the line of scrimmage to audible out of plays.
He does
really?
Not.
Then you're not doing the job right.
Is that a Gase issue with Darnold, or is that Gase just doesn't trust anybody and he's a micromanager and he demands to do that?
That's a Gase issue, yeah.
Right. So I don't think
that's
it's
not
Darnold specific.
No, but that's not the guy you want.
Well, anyway, here's the stats. Sam Darnold hasn't thrown a passing touchdown in his last 142 attempts. The longest active streak in the NFL by far, according to Elias Sports Bureau. Here's the longest streaks right now. Darnold at 142, Jacoby Brissett, who's not even the starter, at 105, and Daniel Jones at 68. So it really is an unbelievable number. If Darnold doesn't throw a passing touchdown within his first 8 attempts on Sunday, he'll be the only player in the last 5 seasons to go 150 straight attempts without a passing touchdown. Nick Foles, the last player to do that in 2015, according to Elias. I mean, he's entering record-breaking areas of ineptitude right now.
Yeah, but here's what you're doing. You're going rogue. You see this, I'm going to send him this. He knows going into this game that he can't throw 8 more passes without a touchdown pass. So he checks out a place. He's running it until he clearly sees
he'll get to the 3.
Till he finds a play he likes to either Mims or Perriman, and then we're going to unleash it, baby.
Just throw it up to one of those guys.
I just don't understand how we got here so quickly. They ruined this kid.
Ruined.
I mean, everybody was so excited when they moved up from 6 to 3 back in 2018 to draft him. Like, I was saying that this is the guy that the Giants should get, Dave. I mean, Sam Darnold was the quarterback that everybody was looking at and saying, you know what? This is the guy that's where the NFL is going in terms of his size, his measurables, his arm talent. Like, there are some plays that this kid makes that defy logic. Like, he's got what you can't teach. And then all of a sudden he becomes a Jet, and now you're ready to move on from him 3 years later. It's unbelievable.
Don't you have to be, though?
No, don't you have to be what?
Ready to move on from him?
No, you're going to move off of him. You got the number one overall pick. You're going to take Trevor Lawrence. I'm just thinking about it, though, Dave. Think about how quickly this has happened.
Does it really surprise you, though?
It does, Rico, because
yes,
we said that
too.
Sam Darnold was so talented that the Jets couldn't even ruin him. And guess what? The Jets ruined him.
I think it's proof, though. I mean, this is the perfect example of how important the situation in the coaching staff is to develop a young quarterback. The reason I say, like, am I surprised? I'm absolutely 100% surprised. But should we be after looking what Adam Gase did to Ryan Tannehill?
No, we shouldn't be surprised. But I am surprised because I believed in Sam, man. I really did.
I think
he's got a chance to resurrect his career based on where he's going to potentially land this offseason. But I'm just thinking about it, how the organization could be so dysfunctional where you can take one of the most highly touted prospects in that draft class and reduce him to where he is now, where you're going to get pennies on the dollar when you trade him.
I think the saving grace for Sam Darnold is, I think that most people around the NFL still feel like Sam Darnold can be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, yeah, because everybody in the NFL understands that Adam Gase is a terrible coach. Like, everybody gets that now. Like, it doesn't matter if Peyton Manning vouched for him. We've seen it. In your 3 years down in Miami and your 2 with the Jets, you're an awful coach. And nobody's going to let you back in their building to coach their players, at least not in the NFL. That's not going to happen. So I think when you recognize that the rest of the league looks at Adam Gase that way, maybe that helps in terms of the overall perception of what Sam can be. Maybe they feel like, you know what, with solid coaching, maybe we can get it out of him.
You're still not going to get a ton for him in return, though.
No, I think I said a second-round pick. That was what the Dolphins ended up trading the Cardinals for Rosen, right?
If you can get a decent second-round pick for him, I think you'd be thrilled if you're the Jets.
Yeah, I think that's right? good. But I mean, he was the third overall pick, Dave.
But you can't even keep him with the organization 3 years in.
But that's all their draft picks, Dave. That's all of them. Look at the draft picks before Sam Darnold. All those high draft picks, they're now with other teams or they're out of the league. It's unbelievable how this organization continues to cycle through players, guys that are top five picks, top 10 picks, and they have no longevity with the Jets. They don't make it to second contracts. At some point, something about that has to change. So to what Rick always talks about is establishing the franchise before you get the franchise player. The next head coach of the Jets is going to be the biggest decision the organization has made in the last 30 years. I don't even think that's close.
Otherwise, you ruin the next one.
Otherwise, you're going to ruin Trevor Lawrence.
Can I get off topic for one quick second? Do you guys have First Take on?
Yes.
Is Stephen A.'s hair green or is it me? Is it my TV?
It's green on my television.
It does look green, yeah.
It has green, to be the right? lighting, though.
Doesn't I can't it? Listen to it, so I have no idea. It looks green.
Yeah, I don't think Stephen A. is going Joker on us.
Maybe he's a Jets fan. Maybe
this is his subliminal. Help me. He's saying, I'm a hostage here.
This is also, though, too. I mean, this is a unique situation, though, too. Like, I mean, normally, if there wasn't a generational talent like Trevor Lawrence, maybe you fire Adam Gase and give Sam at least another year to try to figure it out. But you can't do that now. You can't. You got to take Trevor Lawrence.
No, you have to take Trevor Lawrence. You have to move on. This is where you are. You've been forced into this position.
And it's better for the kid, too. So, like, Sam Darnold needs a change of scenery. He needs a legitimate coaching staff.
Desperate. And it's better for Desperate. The franchise, too, because you're still rebuilding and it resets the clock on the money at the position. Doing you don't have to worry about paying your quarterback top of the market bread.
Yeah, they not for not, years.
They do not have a lot of players on this team.
No.
It's literally a handful, Rico. Literally a handful.
They have a big time. But you know what? I will say this. They have some really good players. I mean, Quentin Williams is good. He's played terrific football. Mekhi Becton looks like he might be one of the better left tackles in all of football already. Mims has shown that he looks like he's going to be a nice player. So you're right. They don't have a ton of talent, but they have a couple of nice pieces.
You just named three people.
You named three players.
Yeah, they don't have players, Dave.
But if they have a franchise left tackle, that's a big piece.
That is a big piece.
That's a huge piece, but you just named three pieces.
Well, they don't have a lot of pieces.
You can't even get a three-piece at McDonald's. Come on. You need at least six.
I can't get six.
You can't get the six. That's a
if
problem.
If you had to go to six, who would your next three be?
Who did you say? You said Becton.
I said Mims.
Depends on what you're going to do with Marcus May.
Marcus May is in their top five in terms of players on the team. I don't know if you're going to pay him, though.
And then you're going to get Mosley back next year.
Right.
Because his contract tolls.
And he's a good player.
But the fact that he decided that he was all set on playing.
He knew.
No, I'm telling you right now. I give the organization a little credit. I mean, you're starting to see with Alex Lewis a little bit that more hasn't leaked out of that locker room. There are not a lot of people, I'm not just saying players, that like Adam Gase or think he's good at his job. That's coaches included.
Well, how could you?
Well, you can't. But the fact that more of that stuff hasn't leaked out, it will. Surprises me.
It will. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, Mr. Jet, you're on 98.7.
Hey, Dave. Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's going on, Ira?
Oh, pretty good. What's going on, guys? Yeah, it'll leak out, you know, probably right after the Patriot game or right after the Brown game, you know, all the dirty laundry will come out. Yeah, but you know what? You're talking about Sam. Oh, by the way, with these players you just mentioned, after you talk about Mims, Becton, you know what? Neville Hewitt, nobody talks about him. This guy's a keeper. This guy's all over the field. Lange's all over the field. You know, those are the type of guys you could build around. And, of course, Douglas has been hit on the draft. But, you know, you talked about Donald. That's how you started it. You know, I'm starting to put Donald, and I don't know, you guys might be a little too young, Browning-Nagel. You know, when you watched him practice and you looked at his raw ability, he would make
Browning-Nagel was drafted in what round?
Second round.
All right. Big difference, right? Third overall pick, second round pick?
Right, but I'm not even going in that direction. I'm just going about raw physical talent. And, I mean, you watch Darnold practice sometimes, and you look at him and say, wow, look at that throw. I mean, how many quarterbacks make that throw? And then another half a dozen plays, what is he looking at? What is he reading? What is he seeing? So, you know, it's best for him to go start, go sit behind a guy like Philip Rivers and let Frank Wright coach up, and maybe, you know, in 2 or 3 years down
Ira,
the road.
Ira, just get away from Adam Gase. Ira, just get away from Adam Gase. We've seen what happened with Ryan Tannehill's career when he got away from Adam Gase. Not to mention all the other guys that played for the Dolphins when they got away from Adam Gase, either with Gase being fired or they went elsewhere. So, I mean, we don't know what Sam Darnold's going to be. We have no idea. But the fact that Adam Gase is so bad at his job, that's why you have to give Sam a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in terms of why things went left the last couple of seasons.
No, I get it. But Ryan Tannehill, you know, even when he was with the Dolphins, okay, he did, you know, he played a lot better than Darnold has with the Jets.
It was the same conversation down in South Florida, Ira. It was like, we don't know what Ryan Tannehill is. We don't know if we got our franchise quarterback. Same conversation. Even after they paid him, it was still a conversation.
Well, this is the type of question you have to ask Mike Key, because, you know, he was there with Tannehill, and he's seen what's going on with Darnold. And quite frankly, I think Tannehill's a much better quarterback than Darnold, even when Darnold gets out of New York.
Ira, we don't know. My point is, we don't know. We have no idea. And, of course, Mike Tannenbaum is going to be biased because he was a part of the regime that got Tannehill. So, we don't know what Sam Darnold is going to be. We have no idea, just because Adam Gase is so bad at his job. We don't even know who the hell is calling plays.
Well, come on, you know Adam's calling a play.
Well, he's saying he's not calling plays. He's saying it's Dowell Loggins. And Dowell Loggins is clearly doing something else when the offense is on the field. So I'm just saying, in terms of trying to say definitively what Sam is or isn't, let's not go down that road. Now, I don't think it'll make a difference in terms of the decision that the Jets will make this offseason if they have the number one pick. But I don't think it's fair to Sam to be overly critical of what's happened to him the last couple of seasons under Adam Gase with this Jets franchise. I don't think that's fair.
Oh, okay. No, I get it. The thing that I feel for Sam is I'm afraid I think his confidence has taken such a big hit that he could turn into like Mark Sanchez, because that's what happened to Sanchez. Once he got beat up and his confidence beat him down, he was never able to get right.
Mark Sanchez did not have the raw ability that Sam Darnold
has. No, Mark Sanchez ain't Sam Darnold.
And there's been plenty of quarterbacks that were put in a bad spot with bad coaching, looked like they could be done, and then all of a sudden they got the right head coach and their franchise quarterbacks. Like Alex Smith was one of those guys. Alex Smith was one of the guys. Nick Foles is not a great quarterback, but when Nick Foles was well coached on a good team, he got the job done.
Yep.
Okay, I get it. I mean,
look at Jared Goff. I mean, like, who thought? Raise your hand if you thought Jared Goff was going to be a bust.
I did.
Yeah, I did too.
Everyone did 100%. Until he got Sean McVay.
Well, you know, hopefully for Sam, he gets...
And by the way, too, Ira, here's the other thing. As much as we love Sam Darnold's raw talent, we still also realize he hadn't played the position for a long time. Like, he was going to reach his full potential, he would need to be coached up. Like, the nuances of the position, how to read a defense. Like, work was going to need to be put into Sam Darnold to get him to be his best. And he hasn't gotten that here. It's Jeremy Bates, and now he's got Adam Gase.
Well, that's true, but I'll leave this with you guys. Look at the throw that he made to Mims on the slant late in the game, and you look at his mechanics on that throw. It looked like he was just tossing the ball. I mean, he hit the player, but it was like he just tossed the ball like he was taking a foul shot. He is so broken down mechanically. It's good. He really got to get the right guy to get this guy straight. I think he has the ability, but if he doesn't find the right situation, he's just going to be, you know, 5 years from now, he might be out of the league.
But Ira, as a Jets fan, that doesn't matter to you. It doesn't matter what situation Sam goes to, because you're looking towards your future with Trevor Lawrence.
But thanks for the call, Ira. Ira's a nice guy, and I think he'd like to see him succeed.
Everybody wants to see Sam succeed. The kid deserves it after the 3 years he's had with this organization. But we got to stop skirting around the fact that the Jets are a dysfunctional organization. They don't retain their draft picks. They don't develop the players that they bring into the organization. They just pay top of the market prices for guys from elsewhere. And when you have a team that's flush with mercenaries, you're not going to build a culture where you can have sustained success. So they got to get out of that. And the way you start that process is by getting the right head coach. And making sure that him and Joe Douglas are on the same page.
Yep. Hopefully it works out for Sam, and hopefully it works out for the Jets as well. Now, today on ESPN Daily, sports lost one of its biggest names when soccer's Diego Maradona died last week. Wright Thompson shares his reporting on the legend and why his time meant so much to Argentina on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. Dan Graziano is going to join us in just a moment here on 98.7. But let's take a call or two before we get to Dan. Let's bring in Nick in Jersey. Nick, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys, big fan. I just wanted to ask what you thought about the Jets, you know, let's get to the main problem. Obviously, it's Adam Gase. Joe Brady, offense coordinator in Carolina, he's going to be a head coach in this league soon enough. I was wondering what you thought about bringing him in as the head coach and allowing him to grow with this team. Seems like a good candidate to me, young guy, offensive, great offensive mind.
He's going to be head coach at some point in the league pretty soon.
I mean, it depends on what you want. I mean, you know, Eric Bieniemy would be one of those names too. Do you want someone that's had, you know, previous head coaching experience, or do you want to take the risk of having someone that's never done it before? Yeah, he's a great offensive mind, but does that mean he's a great head coach? Well, we don't know.
Now, when you say head coaching experience, does that mean at the NFL level or at the college level too?
No, I think college level too. I mean, look what Matt Rhule's doing right now.
He's terrific.
Yeah, but managing the organization, having experience doing that at college level or the pro level, I think that's what Rick is talking about. Like, you want somebody that you feel like is more than capable of doing that. With Joe Brady, I just don't think we have enough of a body of work at the NFL level to feel comfortable handing him the keys to the franchise.
Yeah, this is a huge decision. Let's bring him in. Dan Graziano joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. How are you, Dan? Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we did. We kept it small, just the four of us. But it was nice. How about you guys? All good?
We ate a lot. I mean, we all individually ate a lot. We're concerned that you did not.
No?
Because we think you look a little skinny on TV.
Thank you. I did lose a lot of weight this summer, but certainly been putting it back on the last couple of weeks for some reason. You know, we had pie. We had my 17-year-old had an idea that, you know, in order to make up for the fact that we couldn't have family over, we'd get like 10 different kinds of pie. And we did. So we've been eating pie nonstop for like the last 6 days. And I think it's starting to.
Which one was your favorite pie, Dan? Which one was your favorite?
Well, I'll tell you what, the first one that finished, like the first one that was the coconut custard, which was unbelievable.
But that's a good choice.
We got a blueberry that's almost done. We got a chocolate banana cream that I actually made. That came out all right. So, yeah, we had some fun. We had some fun with the pies.
Wow. All right, let's have some fun with the NFL conversation. Dan, are you at the point, as we turn the calendar and hit December, where you believe the New York Football Giants win the NFC East?
I was ready to be there, but then the Daniel Jones injury happened, right? So, like, I don't know if they can do it with Colt McCoy. And now, no offense to Colt McCoy, but, I mean, obviously, you know, he doesn't bring what Jones brings or else he'd be starting. So I like the way they're playing. Three games in a row. I mean, geez, I had to look back. The last time they won three games in a row was 4 years ago. Like, there's life in the Giants for the first time since we can kind of remember, and I think it's great. But I think if they have to play the rest of the way without Daniel Jones or even a significant chunk of that, then their ceiling is a little bit capped. So I think we had to pick it for this week for one of those round tables. I think I went with Washington, but, man, it's tough to find somebody you like in that division.
Hey, Dan, let me ask you, from what you've heard, are there any truth to the rumors? I mean, Colombo gets fired. He was a Jason Garrett guy. What's the relationship right now like between Joe Judge and Jason Garrett?
I haven't heard anything to indicate that there's trouble there. Now, that doesn't mean that there can't be a situation where you see changes. I mean, if we look at the example of Brian Flores in Miami, he made a lot of staff changes in and after his first year there at coordinator positions. And so it's possible that Joe Judge, after a year in the job, could assess things and go a different direction. I have not at this point heard that that's the plan or that there's any particular problem there, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out given just sort of what we know about new head coaches and how sometimes they take a year or two to kind of get all the pieces exactly where they want. So it's worth watching, but I haven't heard any issue about unrest or discord there.
Dan, looking to today's Ravens-Steelers game, two more positive tests for the Ravens. I think they've got, 16 guys on the reserve COVID list. The NFL said they're going to do the point-of-care testing today before the game. Do we have any idea of the threshold of positive tests that the NFL would feel comfortable with moving ahead with the game?
No, but I think for it would be good if it was zero today, right? Like, just so everybody knows, the point-of-care tests for the Ravens are not unique to today. Every team in the league administers point-of-care and the regular PCR tests on game day. You do the point-of-care test because it's rapid result. You get it back before kickoff. And it's acknowledged that those tests aren't as accurate as the PCR nasal swab test, and that's why they don't do them every day. But if they get a bunch of positives and they can't convince themselves that they're false positives and all, you could see the game get pushed back again. But I just think there is no hard and fast threshold to answer your question. And I think that fact speaks to the complexity of the entire situation, right? There's no real playbook for any of this. They've put the protocols in place. They've changed them as they feel has been needed. And they've adapted them, to different situations. And this is a situation that they're trying to deal with and get the game played safely. But there's all kinds of apprehension among Ravens players about how many positive tests there have been. Is it still safe to play this game, et cetera? And honestly, I think it's hard to blame them because this is weird and new and unprecedented and scary for everybody. And I think, we're just sort of taking it one day at a time.
Yeah, they're going to put their head down, and they're going to play this game. I have absolutely no doubt of it today at 3:40.
I wish I could be as confident.
You don't think they're going to play this game today?
I think they will play the game, but I don't think I can sit here and be sure of it at 10:35 a.m., which is what, about 5 hours till kickoff?
Yeah, exactly that. All right, Dan Graziano here with us, 98.7 ESPN. I want to ask you about Tampa. What's wrong? Is it a Brady Arians combination? Is it Brady? Is it Arians? Is it overall with the team? What's wrong with them right now?
I mean, they're 7-5, right? Like, they just lost to the Chiefs, which everybody loses to. Like, I think perspective is important. This is a team that is being thrown together on the fly, right? Put together in one off season that didn't really even happen as a real off season in key places. I mean, I think there were people talking about them as a Super Bowl contender. I think that was, a little early, and they're getting to know each other, Tom Brady and Bruce Arians and everybody there. And it's obviously been a situation where Brady has had a lot of input in terms of personnel on the offensive side of the ball. I think that's safe to say. And it may be that there's been some butting of heads on those issues and how to design the offense. But what I see is a team that is getting itself together in a year where there really wasn't a real off season to do that, where there's a lot of new pieces in key places. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that's already won 7 games, right, with 4 games to go, that's a lot for the Buccaneers. I mean, it's an improved team. It only won 7 last year total. So I think Tom Brady has helped make them better. It doesn't look as perfect as I think maybe some people were quick to assume it might. They have time to get it figured out. They have a soft schedule the rest of the way, and they could end up rolling into the playoffs on a bit of a confident streak. But right now, I think that the issues that are happening there are to be expected when you put a bunch of new people together like that.
Dan Graziano joins us here on the show. Dan, I don't even know if you can answer this question or not, but why does it seem like the NFL is so hesitant to add the Week 18?
Well, because they don't want to do it until they have to, because you can't predict where the issues are going to be. Let's say you put Pittsburgh and Baltimore, let's say you can't play today, so you say, okay, they're going to play in a Week 18. We're now creating a Week 18 where the Steelers-Ravens game will be made up. Well, what happens if 2 weeks from now there's another problem, and it's with one of those two teams? Now you can't put two Steeler games in Week 18. So because you can't forecast which teams it's going to be, they want to put it off as long as they can. Because you don't want to be in a situation where you're rescheduling too many games for that 1 week, and now you're talking about a Week 19, or you're talking about cancellations, or you're talking about having to decide which of the two theoretical postponed Steeler games is more important, and therefore has to be played while the other one doesn't. So I think that the issue is they would rather not do it. Their goal all along has been to get the whole season played in the 17-game framework that they had originally scheduled. And if they have to add a week, they want to make sure it's a last resort because, you know, you can't just start dumping games there willy-nilly because you might end up creating a conflict for yourself.
So, Dan, why not – I'm not saying go full bubble. By no means do I mean full bubble, but why not do local bubbles? Like, why not put these guys, like, in a training camp situation where it's, you know, kind of what Major League Baseball did, where it's, you know, hotel to facility.
Yeah.
When you got to travel, you travel, just to give yourself the best chance to get through the season.
They couldn't sell that to the players. The players were the ones who were against it, you know, being away from their families for that length of time, et cetera. So it wasn't something that the league and the players could agree on. I'm not even sure how hard the league actually pushed to try and get that done. And the league medical experts, when you talk to them, they will point out that, you know, the bubble situation comes with its own issues because if something does get in, it can spread more quickly. And you mentioned they are traveling, so it's not like, you know, they're never going to come in contact with anyone else. So this is what they've decided to do. They're potentially hours away from successfully completing 12 of the 17 weeks, which is, I mean, I think kind of pretty good when you think about it. But they know that it's going to get tougher and tougher and tougher. We have no idea what the week 13 issues are going to be, only that there will be some. And I think as the spread gets worse nationally, as we've seen, as the weather turns colder and people can't be outside as much, the challenges are only going to increase, and they may have to consider a bubble for the playoffs, as has been suggested in some competition committee meetings and all that. But right now, it's about getting through each week.
Dan, today only three head coaches have been fired in the National Football League, and none of them are named. None of them are named Adam Gase. And I've been trying to figure out the rationale for the Jets organization. I know it's not the Johnson family's way of handling situations like this and firing coaches midseason. But I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, some people have floated the idea that maybe the Jets want to keep Adam Gase as their head coach to give them the best chance of going winless and having the number one overall pick. Can you try to give us some insight as to why they're keeping Adam Gase on as the head guy when he's clearly not done a good job?
That's a heck of a thing to say about a guy. We want you around because it gives us the best chance to lose. I mean, my goodness, talk about admitting mistake. Look, I think it's evident to everyone there and around the league that there will be a change at that position.
Mm-hmm.
Why not do it now? You know, to get into the mind of an NFL team owner can be tricky. But, I mean, you know, when you ask around about it, some of the suggestions that come up are, look, they're paying him. You know, nobody likes to pay somebody to not work. And, you know, there's a thought maybe that this is a miserable season for everybody in that organization. You know, why should he get to get off scot-free and enjoy a relaxing December while the rest of us suffer? So, yeah, I think it's something that 5 weeks from now we'll be talking about, you know, who they're interviewing for the position. But it wouldn't be surprising to me to see them let him get the last five and then call it a day.
All right, Dan, hopefully we make it through week 12 today. We'll talk to you to wrap up week 13 a week from today. Good stuff as always. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. That, of course, is Dan Graziano. I don't believe, by the way, at all, that he's just sitting around eating pie. He's too skinny for that.
Well, no, she's like my wife. Like, I just ate some pie. It's like she has one bite of the pie, and that's
oh, he's one like a
pie.
Sliver kind of person?
Yeah, he just takes a bite.
Oh, I guess
which
that's
I can't
possible.
Do. The second it hits
that's
my
not,
lips.
That's, you're not really eating it then. You're nibbling on it.
Well, no, you've consumed it. I mean, I mean, your idea of eating it is completely different than
I'd like
Dan's.
To put the pie in four slices.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm going to eat it till like, I'm satisfied, which usually
you don't
like,
feel
half
well.
The pie. Yeah, I'm loading up on the ice cream, the pie, mixing it up. I mean,
that's right. Whipped cream. You can't shortchange.
You know what I did?
Cream.
You know what I did too this year? I made an executive decision. We went with the pumpkin pie, which is the way
love
Cassie
it.
Makes it. It's fantastic. I do the pie, I do the crust, I do the and she makes the filling, and then I said to myself, why am I going to do a top crust and a bottom crust for the apple pie? Like, there's no need to do that. Why don't we mix it up a little bit? Cass made an oatmeal. It was essentially an oatmeal cookie dome around the apple pie. It was
like the Thunderdome for the pie.
It was a thunder. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was a thunder in your mouth. Like when you mix this with the vanilla ice cream. Oh,
you're funny. Don't miss Disney's new movie Safety, inspired by a true story of Clemson football safety Ray McElrathby. Start streaming exclusively on Disney Plus and do that on
have you
December
seen the previews for this movie,
the
by the way?
I have.
Looks awesome.
I love those movies.
It looks awesome.
Love those movies. video chatting with the family this holiday season. We've got the perfect get for everyone's virtual gathering. New York Jets quarterback Sam Darnold. It's 7 ESPN. Sam and the fam. Sweepstakes. Here's how you win. Send us a brief message telling us why Sam should hang with your family for a 30-minute virtual huddle. Send us that message at 987ESPN@gmail.com. That's 987ESPN@gmail.com. Winners will each get a one-of-a-kind experience with friends and family to have a virtual hangout with Sam Darnold. It's all from your home for the hookup and your home for the hangout, 987ESPN. You've got time. Let's go. It's an Observations.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Nobservations.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. Hump Day edition of Nobservations. David, quickly, what does the weather look like?
It's gray out there, a high of 43, sun setting at 426, UV index is 1, air quality is good, visibility 10 miles, and that is...
The weather outside is weather.
All right, Christopher Canty, I have to ask you this because I can't count on Dave. He was supposed to watch the rest of Ozarks, never did it, so he's dead to me. Undoing, did you watch the finale?
I did.
Okay, it's Wednesday. Are we allowed to speak of the finale now that it's...
No!
Wednesday?
Yeah, I don't think it's a spoiler alert.
Okay, speaking of knobs, right? So that would, I mean, Dinahan weeks ago said he thought it maybe was the kid, and then, you know, the grandfather helped cover it up. You know, we all know how it ended. An observation here. What are we doing hiding the murder weapon in the outdoor barbecue where the kid could actually, like, you could actually see it just playing in the backyard? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, the husband is definitely a knob for that. I don't understand it.
The whole situation.
Yeah. And it was so obvious that he was the one that did it. Like, I don't get it. Like, the ending, I thought it was going to be some kind of plot twist.
Nope.
But it was the guy that everybody suspected all along, which was ridiculous.
I mean, he's a psychopath. And then the Nicole Kidman completely set him
up. She sandbagged him, though.
Completely set him up.
He had a shot before she took the stand.
Completely set him up. Him and that. Now, let me ask you a question, because I was talking to someone this. Was the blonde friend that she, you know, went for the walk with, was she in an intimate relationship with the prosecution lawyer?
I'm not sure, but I thought she had more to do with it. Like, I secretly thought maybe she could have been involved with
the
husband
the
as well, and she did it. I thought that as well, just because of how awkward it was with things at that table when they were organizing that fundraiser. But I don't know, man. It just with Hugh Grant being the guy that was guilty all along, it just seemed like it was a little bit of it was anticlimactic. Maybe it's just me, but that's how I felt. Like, it's like, why did I waste my time watching this miniseries when the guy that we thought did it in episode 1 turns out was the guy that did it in episode 6?
I know, it seems so obvious.
Speaking of wasting time, you now have a minute left in Nobservations.
That's not wasting time.
It's not wasting time. It needed to be said. Rick is absolutely right for bringing it up.
Did this happen in Florida? A man who had falsely been declared dead made an unexpected return to life Tuesday as he was lying on a table in the morgue about to be embalmed. 32-year-old man shocked onlookers as he screamed when morticians sliced his leg open to start the embalming process.
Wait, they actually sliced his leg open?
They sliced him open.
Until
they sliced him open, they thought he was dead. They sliced him open, he woke up screaming, and he's alive.
Who the hell signed the death certificate? You have to have a death certificate before you go to the morgue.
He was taken to the hospital. Nurse told him the guy had died, gave him a document to take to the mortuary attendant before his brother was moved to the morgue.
Yeah, that's not
no
Florida.
Way. There is no way that's this country.
Not Florida.
Zero chance.
Okay, Dinahan, Florida?
Well, Dinahan doesn't know, but...
Dinahan doesn't even have a microphone.
I meant Santiago. It's both raised.
I refuse to say that it's Florida. It's not the United States of America. Can't be.
You guys
it cannot
correct.
Be.
That's Kenya. All right, last story of Nobservations. Here we go. So we all saw the Nate Robinson... Jake Paul fiasco?
Yep.
Yes.
So, Jake Paul, Chris, you were right, by the way. Jake Paul did start on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
He has now like 20 million subscribers on YouTube. So, you know, everyone's coming out of the woodwork. They want to fight, you know, Jake or his older brother Logan. This could be one of the best clapbacks of all time. So, Jose Canseco says, I will fight anyone of the Logan brothers. They have enough for anyone with any type of talent yet or fighting skills. So, how does Logan Paul respond? Oh, by the way, Logan Paul... has dated Jose Canseco's daughter, Josie. No
Savage.
Problem. No problem. I love smashing Canseco's.
Oh my God.
Drop the mic. It's over. It's over. That one ended quicker than the fight with Nate Robinson. It's over.
Oh, dear.
It's over.
I might pay to watch that fight.
Oh,
that might be well worth
it. Canseco's daughter caught a stray.
Oh, my God. Enjoy your afternoon football, everybody.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.